Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you're going to use the upcoming three-day weekend to catch up with your garden, you're in luck. We're here to talk about that today with Deborah Kanapke, author of many books, a co-author of many books, and also known as Ohio's Garden Sage. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
It's nice to be back.
Now, is school out yet? Because you teach at Columbus State.
Mm-hmm. This is our ninth week. Next week is the 10th week, okay. And then we have finals.
Okay. So thank you so much for coming in. Can I just say thank you once again? Of course, you're not taking the finals, right?
No, my students are. The test's already made. I just have to tweak it, make sure it's okay.
How's your garden growing?
A lot. Although I'm already seeing some signs of stress in my garden. Well, we had so much rain, and then we had no rain. And now the heat's going up. So some of the plants that I put in a couple weeks ago are saying, hey, where's my rain? And so I'm going around and I'm doing some watering. In fact, this morning before I came in, I was weeding and watering. And yeah.
My husband, who comes from a truck farming background, his grandpa was a farmer, said we can't keep watering it every single night.
Correct.
The vegetable gardens, because they're not going to grow the roots they need.
Mm-hmm. So I planted my tomatoes. They're doing great. I don't want them to get to wilt stage, but when the heat goes up, I'll wait about 3-4 days and then I'll water deep. But I sit there and it's a trickle, and it's slow and deep, not just with the wand going whoosh, 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 okay, I'm done.
Which evaporates.
And it's no good, because that is what actually pulls roots up to the surface.
Okay.
Because it says, oh, water's at the surface, let me bring the roots up. If you have deep water, then the roots are going to go down in search of that moisture.
Well, sometimes you see watering apparatuses where there's a pipe going down in deep, and that's what that's for.
Mm-hmm. And you'll see that more with trees and shrubs.
Uh-huh, right.
Not so much with herbaceous plants or vegetable gardens. But you also see drip systems, and you have the drip system, and it's dripping, and then in my vegetable garden, I haven't picked it up yet. I have to get some straw or alfalfa hay, but I have that on top. So then I pull that apart, water deep, put it back on top to stop evaporation from that upper layer.
Should you do that with your mulch as well?
With the mulch, I try not to put mulch right up
next
to any plant, be it woody or herbaceous. For woody plants, I like to keep the mulch about 6 to 8 inches away from the base. For herbaceous plants, 2 to 4. And that way, that's where you put your water. Again, you don't have your wand up here spraying. You have your wand down at the soil level, at where the plant is. It's almost impossible to get everything really moist unless you have an irrigation system. And I don't. I am the irrigation system.
Yes, you do.
So
it's not automatic.
Yeah. So you have to make sure that the water's getting to the plant, not to the weed.
My guest is Deborah Kanapke. She's author of many books. She teaches at Columbus State, and she also consults and has a blog. We'll talk about that in a little while. If you want to see the blog, we'll post a link to it. It's called Heartland Gardening, and she shares it with two other avid gardeners. Go to WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have a link for you there. If you want to talk with Deborah Kanapke, question, comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@WOSU.org. And, of course, there's always the All Sides Facebook page. Sunny in Mount Gilead, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Sunny.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm out planting like crazy. I just planted a dozen pepper plants, and I'm about to plant beets, which I found this really works for me. The seeds make multiple plants, you know, and I just drop one in these little tiny 1-inch pellets. They're called Jiffy Nines, and they're hard to find, but you can get them. And once the plant starts, then I bury the pellet. But anyway, my question is, I'm growing, among others, bull's blood, an heirloom that's said especially good for greens, and cut the greens for salad.
Right.
But if you do that, how does a beet develop?
Well, this particular beet's actually been selected for its succulent foliage.
Right.
It's not as astringent as other beet foliage, and it doesn't make a very good root. So it's one of those, in fact, in Indian cooking, they differentiate between the beet leaf and the beet root in their recipes. And when they want beet leaf, it's usually a bull's blood type of beet. So that particular one, go ahead and cut. In fact, what you can do is take out the outer leaves.
Right.
And then your inner leaves keep growing. Right. And so you keep on harvesting the foliage from that same root.
Well, is the beet not, is the root not good to eat, or is it just not as not the better part of it?
It's not the better part. In fact, it's kind of, I did, when you pull up, when you have this big, beautiful bunch of leaves, you pull up the root and it's this little skinny, stringy thing. And I tried to eat it and it's nasty. So stick with the leaves.
I also have some chayogas, I guess.
Those are excellent.
Okay, then I'll eat the beets for the chayogas and eat the leaves from the bull's blood.
That's right. Perfect.
Thanks,
got
Sonny.
It.
Okay.
Stay
thanks.
Cool, Sonny.
Thanks.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye. Sharon in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Sharon.
Hi,
Sharon.
Good morning. I do not have the several hundred dollars to invest in a drip irrigation system, but I do have lots and lots and lots of gallon jugs, and I was wondering about using gallon jugs with pinholes, fill them up at my rain barrel center by the plant.
Sounds good to me. You know, I think in the garden, it's all about innovation. Well, in life, it's all about innovation, how to get things done the easiest way. And that kind of system is also used for woody plants in the very expensive gator bags you can buy. There's little pinholes in the bottom, and the water slowly exits out. And for the trees and shrubs that have just been planted, you're doing the same thing.
Excellent.
So,
thank you. Idea.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, Sharon, bye-bye. 614-292-8513 if you'd like to talk to our guest, Deborah Knapke. John in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, John.
Hi. I was over the other day at Sutherland's. I went to buy tomato plants and cabbage plants, and I wanted some seeds for green beans and corn, and there was no cabbage plants. They were sold out. They had no green bean seeds. They were sold out. And they had no corn seeds. They were all sold out.
Now, Deborah's smiling
I'm
ear
so
to ear.
Smart. I'm so sorry that you didn't find any seeds, but I'm really glad that people are buying them.
Oh, me too. But, you know,
what
if,
now?
If I get any, is it going to be everywhere like that?
No, I have seen, I was just, whenever I see a garden center, and if I have the time, I like to stop in. I was at Oakland Nursery on 161 yesterday, and they have seeds. I was at Strader's on King Avenue, and they have seeds. You know, the thing is that's what telephones were invented for. So, and before you go to someplace, give a call and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. But there are seeds all over. I'm glad Sutherland's is sold out, and I think the other garden centers around town would love to be sold out, too. So give a call, and I bet, let's see, in Grove City, I'm trying to think what you have close to you. Well, you know, get on the phone and you'll find seeds. There are seeds and plants all over, especially at your farmer's markets, too.
I feel better now.
Okay, good.
Thanks, John.
Thank you very much.
And if anybody at Sutherland's wants to give us a call and tell us, no, we've got seeds now, that's okay, too.
Yeah, that's good, too.
We've talked about this before, the mild winter and now this very mild spring, which I kept predicting another snowstorm. I'm finally saying, okay, there probably won't be a snowstorm.
Me too.
But with all of that, a lot more insects. So what are the good, the bad, and the ugly? What do we need to know?
Okay. First of all, you need to know which insects are your good ones and your bad ones. You don't want to kill all of them because you want your good insects to eat your bad insects. The joy of watching a lady beetle eat an aphid is incredible. So I have a book here. It's Garden Insects of North America. You can get it out of the library. But you can also go to Ohio Line fact sheets that talk about insects and check out the Beagle, the BYGL. It's, oh gosh, it's BYGL.osu.edu, I believe. And every week there's a digest about what's happening in the landscape. And it's a great, they have pictures of good bugs, bad bugs, etc. I have noticed that when I have found grubs that they are ahead. They're huge, you know, Japanese beetle grubs and whatever. I don't find many of them in my garden anymore, but I do find some. So they're bigger. So you need to watch. You need to watch for bugs. You need to watch for damage on your plants. And yes, we have more bugs. We have more bad ones, but we have more good ones. And it's actually only 5% of the bugs out there that are bad ones. But because they do things that we don't like, we notice them right away.
Are we ahead of time? I mean, are we at like 2.5 weeks ahead? That's what I've estimated in terms of the growing season.
I think we're finally catching up.
Okay.
I think that we're starting to even out. At one point, my garden was 4 weeks ahead, according to when things bloom and what's happening. Now I feel like I'm about a week ahead.
It was really nice at one point because there was so much stuff in bloom. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen so much color at once.
I know. And some of my May is just like gone. It's like,
Yeah.
What? So I'm kind of curious as to what my June's going to be like because my June's already happening. And it's a little disconcerting.
One thing, usually when I come back from my spring break, I have time to split up the hostas. Mm-hmm. And I did not have time to do that this year. There was too much other stuff to do. Everything happened so fast.
Well, another thing, too, is 3 days ago we started eating our June berries. So this year our June berries were May berries, otherwise known as service berries or amelanchiers. So, yeah, we're a couple weeks, 1 week ahead. And so that means we just had to be a little bit more frenetic. Or frantic in the garden. I don't know if I can take that
anymore than you usually.
But we can
are.
We can start slowing down because the heat's going to hit.
Paul in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is your screener wasn't sure if this was related, but I'm sure it is.
Okay, let's go for it.
Yeah, a praying mantis, which is like, you know, your king predator if you can get them to stick around. For eating bad bugs. And I found early this spring two egg sacs.
Okay.
And I know exactly, I mean, I know what I'm looking at.
Right.
Okay. But my question is, you know, how do you know, you know, if the mantids or babies or whatever you call them, if they've actually come out? Now, I found one yesterday, a half an incher. You know, like
well, that's pretty big.
That's big. They probably came out, I want to say 2-3 weeks ago, and all of a sudden you'll see a swarm of thousands of little guys, and then you watch them eat each other.
Well, yeah, I know. It's not real pretty, but you know,
luckily they're so tiny that
the few that you know pop up and get to be adults and you know fly at your hair and make women scream. And in fact, I'm not a woman, but I'll scream too when they come at my face. But they're, you know, they're wonderful. I just wondered if there was any, the egg sac doesn't change.
No, it doesn't because they come out through all those little spongy holes.
Yeah.
I just let them hang there and eventually they go away. As to how to tell that they've hatched, I just watch for them in my garden.
Okay. Well, I just, like I said, I just stumbled on one. He was about a half an incher. And I found two egg sacs, which I mean to me is, I mean I didn't buy these online or anything. I mean they occurred and I was very happy about that. Okay, thank
All
you.
Right. You're welcome.
My question.
Thank you, Paul. My guest is Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's garden sage. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you can tweet me at Ann Fisher WOSU if that's more convenient. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the eve of Memorial Day, join us as we honor the service and sacrifice of our men and women in uniform, their families here at home, and all those who have given their lives for our country at the National Memorial Day Concert. It's an all-star lineup including General Colin Powell, Natalie Cole, Trace Atkins, the National Symphony Orchestra, and many more. Join us for a night of remembrance, broadcasted live from the U.S. Capitol. It's the National Memorial Day Concert, Sunday night at 8 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Noble on Long Condos, offering homeownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring a diverse community with a mix of historic and newly built homes and condos. Details at homeportohio.org/nobleonlong.
76 degrees with sunshine in downtown Columbus. Mostly sunny skies for today, a high of 85. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 66 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about plants. Are you going to be working in your garden this weekend? Have you fallen behind? Do you have any questions or comments? You can give us a call because my guest is Deborah Kanapke, author of many books on gardens and also known as Ohio's Garden Sage, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can go on to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page as well. Carol in Mansfield, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Hi. Thanks, first of all, for having such great programs, Ann. I listened to the one just prior to this one, and now you've got exactly what I need.
Okay. Thanks, Carol, for listening.
Okay. My question is, what's the appropriate time of the day in this expected heat to water? Would you water in the late evening? Would you water in the early morning? Would you do both? And then I have a follow-up question. We have a water softener. And we should not be using that water on outside watering. Is that correct?
That is correct. It wouldn't hurt if you use it every once in a while, but if you use it constantly, you're going to find a problem with the salts. It's a potassium. I get my chemicals mixed up. I believe it's a potassium salt as opposed to a calcium salt. But that's not what I meant. Sodium salt. It's not, yeah. So you will find a problem eventually. As to your other question about watering, my favorite time to water is early in the morning before the heat hits.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is because I don't want to get too hot. As to watering in late evening, that is fine if you make sure that you don't get the foliage too wet. Because what you may get, especially when we get into our hotter days, is you may get some disease problems. Bacteria, fungi, etc. It starts cooling off just a little bit at night, and they say, okay, time to grow. So if you do water later at night, you want to make sure that you're at ground level, not at plant level. Next, one other thing. Some people like to, you'll sometimes see irrigation systems going on at late morning. Even in the afternoon.
Even after it rains.
Yeah, and after it rains, yeah. That's another issue. But in the afternoon, that's probably one of the worst times you can water is the afternoon because there's so much evaporation of the water.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, my first is early morning. But I have watered in the evening when I've gone outside and said, oh my gosh.
I forgot to water.
That or it's dying. So sometimes, and I have watered in the middle of the day. I just make sure I'm getting it right at the soil level if I notice that a plant is in trouble.
Great answers. Thank you very much, Deb.
You're welcome.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Carol.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beth.
I'm really glad that you have the gardening goddess on. I'm a newbie, and I'm worse than a newborn parent. our plot is, this is the first apartment that I've had where we've been able to plant and garden. And for some reason, the end that I got just seems to be the saddest end. Everybody else's seemed to be coming along pretty well, and mine was fairly anemic. So I got the answer to the watering.
Okay, good.
Because it's just so incredibly dry out there.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks like it needs to be watered all the time. But I put a bunch of, I went to the store, got some composting advice because our compost bin hadn't been dealt with. And I thought I'd take on the responsibility. Got all the good stuff from the bottom, mixed everything up again with some grass, and just went and applied very liberally to my anemic end of the area. And I just wanted to know if there's anything else you could help me with.
Okay. The compost was an excellent first step. mixing it with grass. I don't know if that was the best thing to do at this point, but the grass will, as long as it's not a lot of grass, the grass will compost into the compost just fine, and you'll get some nitrogen. What it sounds like it's going on is you did get the sad end of the plot. So compost, and as soon as that compost disappears, put some more on, especially make sort of a ring around each plant about 3 inches away from it, especially tomatoes. And when you water, water well. The other thing I would suggest is go out and find some alfalfa hay or some straw, and that will prevent the evaporation from your part of the garden, of the water going up into the atmosphere. It sounds like you're just going to have to build the soil, and this is a building year. So if you end up staying there for next year, what I would do is put a load of compost. First of all, say this is my part of the plot. Put a load of compost down in hot compost in fall and let it cook over the winter, and then you will have the best part of the bed next year.
You say the straw?
Yeah, you can use straw or alfalfa hay, and you kind of put it between your plants. Don't cover your plants. Put it between,
okay.
And it helps modify the heat at the ground level.
Okay, too. And I've read about putting lots and lots of rocks around your plants so that they keep.
Not in your vegetable garden. Don't do that.
Not in your vegetable garden.
You will hate it later when you have to dig up and all you hit is rocks.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Good
Thank
luck
you.
With that.
Thanks, Beth.
Okay. Okay.
Take
care. Bye.
Bye-bye. The number to call is 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to talk to Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage. So an email from Robert, Deborah.
Hey.
He says, what are the best ground cover or even blooming plants for shade and dry shade conditions?
Okay, dry shade is one of the hardest conditions to grow in because most plants don't like that. There are a couple plants, but they are vigorous ground covers. One of them is Robs Euphorbia robii. But that's dry shade, and it's if nothing else will grow there, this will. And if it gets into good garden soil, watch out, world, it will take over. Mm. So this is for your dry shade. Another dry shade. Once it's established, you'll have to water the first year, but the dead nettles, Lamium maculatum, Lamium galeopodilin are the botanical names. We call them spotted dead nettle or variegated dead nettle, so you can look for those. But you would have to water your first year to make sure that the roots get established. They become drought tolerant over time. In terms of shade, if you have moderate shade and you want some native plants, there's our wonderful native wild ginger, Acerum canadense. There's also our native pachysandra, which is Pachysandra procumbens. I should probably be writing all these down or something, just these botanical names. So I hope you're frantically scribbling these names. There are many, many ground covers. The big issue with ground cover is make sure that if it's a vigorous one, that you are planting it where it's not going to impact other plants, if especially something like the euphorbia. And beware of Bishop's goutweed and Houtunia. Those are two, or the chameleon plant, that just take off.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Nick in Mount Gilead, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Hi.
Hi.
I see two blueberry bushes.
I'm sorry, Nikki. Sorry
Nikki.
About that.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I got two blueberry bushes as a gift for Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
They are self-pollinating.
Good.
But I've never grown anything other than perennial flowers. Do I prune them back? Do I let them go? They already have like a couple of little blueberries on them. Should I let them have them this year? Or
sure. But I will warn you, the birds might get them before you do unless you protect them, because the birds, one of their favorite things is blueberries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, your soil in Mount Gilead, I'm not familiar with it, but I will tell you what blueberries need. They need acidic soil. They're related to the rhododendron. So if you can grow rhododendrons or azaleas well, your blueberries should grow well. Okay. That's one. Two, they must have well-draining soil. And they are hungry, hungry plants. If you're planting them in the ground, add a lot of compost to the surrounding soil. Dig the hole twice as wide as what you need for the blueberry. Do not plant the blueberry any deeper than it is in the pot. Have it at that same level in the ground, but like 2 feet out from it.
Okay.
Mix in compost and then top dress with compost. They like to eat. They're hungry. So if you want good blueberries, you're going to need to feed them with compost. Some people also fertilize. There is a product by Espoma called Holly Tone that is a nice fertilizer to put down for blueberries too. And there is a fact sheet on blueberry growing, ohioline.osu.edu, which
okay.
I know we put All Sides puts a link to. Take a look at that and sit down with a cup of tea or a glass of wine and learn all about blueberries.
Very much.
You're welcome.
Right. Thanks, Nikki. Email from Dan. He writes, for those of us traveling this weekend and leaving several pots of annuals behind in the high temps, are we at risk of losing them?
Yes.
in a word, Dan.
We're supposed to go up into the 90s. And 3 days of 90-degree temperatures with containers that are not being watered, you'll come back to wilted plants, and some of them may have already expired. So if there's a neighborhood kid who wants to make $5, or a friend that will water your containers for you early in the morning, that would be a wonderful thing.
Okay, Dan, keep them watered. Dave in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you. We have some Brandywine tomatoes we grew from seeds.
Yes.
My wife and I got them from Monticello a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's the place that they started. The stems are sort of wimpy looking. You know, we're going to transplant them this weekend outside. Will they eventually thicken up to support the plants, or do we have to pinch them back?
They will eventually thicken up, but they're starved. They're hungry. That's why they're spindly. They're starved for food and possibly for light. I don't know. Did you start them inside or outside?
Outside, but they've been getting pretty much light.
Okay. So when you put them in the ground, I want you to dig a hole that's pretty deep, and I want you to put your plant as far down as you can so that you just have the top two leaf groupings showing.
Okay.
And in that hole, you need to put in some compost.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I plant a tomato, it gets compost. And then I make a little ring around it about 4 inches away from it, which will be where you put the water to go down to your plant. And I put compost inside that ring also. And I would water very deeply, slowly, deeply. And then 2 days later, slowly, deeply. And then you can stretch out to 3 or 4 days if we don't get rain. The important thing about tomatoes is that they will send out roots all along their stem. So if you can sink them deeper, that also makes them more drought tolerant once we get into the summer, and they fruit better that way. So I hope that helps.
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
You're all welcome.
Right. Thanks, Dave. We have an email from Carol. She writes, how can I keep squash bugs from ruining my wax beans this summer? Is there a chemical-free way to do it?
It's called your two fingers and a big jar
pincer.
Of soapy water.
Okay.
Oh, they're a pain. They are such a pain. Your leaves look like Swiss cheese. So basically, non-chemical way, I don't really know of a non-chemical way. I've usually just planted enough beans and put compost, make sure, compost is my answer to everything, but I make sure that my beans are as stress-free as possible, which means that they're well-watered and they have compost, and that they will come back after the bean beetles or squash beetles have eaten them. But I do go through and I will shake the vines and I'll try to catch some of these and put them in soapy water. They're small. I don't know, if anyone else has something that they do, please call in and I will look that up and try to get back to you, Carol, on Facebook. I'll put something up on Facebook.
What do you do with those squash bugs? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Ramona in Grandview, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ramona.
Hi, we're urban gardeners and farmers in Grandview, and I noticed that my neighbor this year, he mulched his vegetable plants with some Posy Power.
Mm-hmm.
It tilled that in a few years ago when we were building the soil up.
Okay.
And I wonder if that's a good mulch. Now, compared to his, our plot looks really dry, so I'm jealous. His looks
Ooh.
Real good. So I'm not sure, is Posy Power supposed to be used as a mulch? Or I thought it
sure.
was supposed to be tilled in.
It can be used as a mulch. It can be tilled in. You said you put the Posy Power in 2 years ago. Did you do anything last year?
We've been putting compost.
Okay, good.
We are composting. And I did put compost. Our compost just doesn't look like a mulch. I just work it into the soil.
Mm-hmm. That works.
So I did put... what we had in, around the plants when I planted them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, will that work as a mulch? It just doesn't look like a mulch.
Sure. Mulch is anything that you put on top of the soil. It could be stones. It could be
leaves,
trees, you know, chopped up trees. You know, uh-huh. We put hardwood mulch down, cypress, pine, you name it. So... It's a mulch that goes away fast because the organisms in the soil eat it up and then transfer that energy to your plants. So mulch...
So maybe that's why ours look dry so fast now compared
right.
to his power Posy Power.
Yeah, mulch is... When you use that kind of mulch, though, it's all ready to be used and it's used quickly, especially in the heat when it just disappears fast. So... In my vegetable garden, I may put compost down 2 or 3 times around my plants in the summer. So, yeah,
okay.
You need more compost.
Okay, so just keep doing that. And just one more question.
Sure.
We got some beautiful greens. Last year, that little green caterpillar mm-hmm. just, I thought it was being so nice with nature. And I'm like, oh, he's so cute. And the next day, the dinosaur kale
mm-hmm.
was gone, literally gone.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. They.
So
I smush those.
Captain, I'm not that cool with the little guys.
Okay.
I got some Captain Jacks. It's called Cinnapad or something.
So it uses cinnamon.
No, Cinno. It's supposed to be for organic garden.
Captain Jack.
Spinosad.
Oh, spinosad. I'm sorry. Yeah, spinosad.
Yeah, spinosad.
Oh, gosh, I'm trying to remember. It is organic. I'm trying to remember what it is, and I'm sure.
They said it came from some Bohemian, some in the Bahamas or some, an island. It was a cave, and it was a microorganism, and it sounded all creepy.
Yeah, actually, I think Anne's looking it up right now.
A dead bug brew.
A dead bug brew. So it's
gross.
I'll tell you what. I will look that up and see what I can find out about spinosad. I know it is an organic option. I'm just not as familiar with it. I've not used it.
Okay. Do you have a home remedy?
A home remedy? Yeah. It's my two fingers.
Your two fingers?
Yeah.
Oh,
whenever I see them, I lift up the leaves. They're usually underneath. And what they are is the caterpillar of the cabbage moth. Or cabbage butterfly.
Right.
I'm sorry, the cabbage white.
Is that pretty little white one?
Yeah, it's very pretty with the little dots.
Yeah, and they're already around.
Yes, they are. And they're laying eggs, and so you're getting your second generation.
Okay.
So you can get several generations. So you just have to keep a watch. And when you harvest them, you know, look for them so that you're not adding extra protein to your meal.
Yes, I think we might have done that last year.
Yeah.
Quite a few times.
Okay.
But you wouldn't say, I know somebody said put some detergent, use one of these soap type of things.
Actually, an insecticidal soap would probably work. That clogs up their breathing, the spiracles on the side of their bodies. And I don't think it would harm the plant as long as it's not too much soap. Too much soap will harm your plant.
I think it was a couple of drops per gallon, she was saying. And then she said add canola oil, like a...
To make it stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's all kinds of home remedies, and truthfully, I've not used them as much. We plant a lot of kale, so if I notice it's going away, I start watching for the caterpillars and spray them off with a jet of water, and I also get to water at the same time. And then the birds may see them and come and get them, too.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah, so good luck with that.
Be as natural as possible. You've been very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call, Ramona.
All right. Bye-bye.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back.
I went down to the river to watch the fish swim by.
That's Hank Williams from the soundtrack of the new Wes Anderson film Moonrise Kingdom. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Randall Poster, music supervisor of that film and all of Wes Anderson's films. He's also chosen music for directors Martin Scorsese, Todd Haynes, and Richard Linklater. Join us. She's long.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. WOSU Public Media presents the Chefs in the City online auction. You can bid now on fabulous Chefs in the City culinary theme packages. New items are constantly being added, and items close on a weekly basis. So bid early and often, and bid high to buy. All proceeds benefit children's educational programming on WOSU. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to view all items up for bid. And it's 76 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today, a high of 85. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 66 degrees. Expect some sunshine for Friday. There is a slight chance of rain and a high of 86. Clouds Friday night, a low of 67. And sunshine again for Saturday and a warm day with a high near 90. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Deborah Kanapke. Maybe you know her as Ohio's Garden Sage. Maybe you took classes from her at Columbus State. In any of it, maybe you read her blog. It's called
Heartland Gardening.
Heartland Gardening. We'll have a link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Say it three times in a row very quickly.
No, I won't, because I'll mess it up.
I have an email from Mike. If you'd like to email us your question or comment for Deborah, allsides@wosu.org is the address. Email from Mike. He says, I'm growing green beans and did last year, too. Both this year and last, the leaves have had little holes or openings in them. I'd like to know. Little hole, that's a nice way to put it, openings in them. What might cause them? Should I be concerned? And if I should be concerned, what can I do? Last year, the beans grew like crazy, so evidently enough sun was getting through.
Good point. Mike, go on to Facebook, to the All Sides page. Tonight, I will put up the answer to the squash bug, bean bug problem that beans have. What you can do about it, I want to check out a couple organic controls. It sounds like maybe Captain Jack Spinosad might be, I have to
see. We've been checking that out during the break.
Yeah, during break. I have heard of it, and now I know that it is a little bacterium, as Ramona said, that was found in a cave. It sounds very strange. I want to check it out. I want to do some research.
In a rum distillery.
In a rum distillery. My goodness. Now, there is a bacteria.
Sounds like my kind of bacteria.
I do not really do much for the bean beetles other than sometimes shake the plants and collect them below. But then I make sure that the beans have enough compost and water so they can grow out of it when the bean beetle cycle is done. But I will put up more information tonight.
Jonathan in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
I just had two comments. The spinosad that you guys are talking about, that's also for the animal side of things. They make a flea pill for a dog, and the dog takes the pill, so it is a pretty safe product.
Good.
But that's besides the point, Mike. My question was about if you could expand on the frequency of watering, how often watering a garden should occur. Both my raised beds are in direct sunlight, so I've been watering every day, but I'm wondering if that's too much watering. And then my second comment was on compost. I have a compost bin. And when do you know the compost is ready to put on the garden?
Okay. Watering your garden, watering every day. Yeah, too much. Instead, what I'd like you to consider is every second or third or fourth day, depending on temperatures, and water slow and deep. It's going to take you longer, and do it around each plant. Sometimes when we water every day, we water too shallowly. I don't know your water technique, but deep watering.
Can you define deep watering?
Okay. When I have I have a wand that has a cutoff. Mm-hmm. I go to my tomato plant. I turn the wand on. I fill the little basin that is around my tomato plant. I turn the water off, go to my next tomato plant. By the way, we have about 20 tomato plants, so this takes me a while. And then I go through that twice. I do that twice so that the water goes down.
It seeps in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and then I fill it up again.
Okay.
So deep watering. And I watered on Monday, and I'm going to water tomorrow. So that kind of gives you an idea. I'm doing 4 days at this time. And soon I will lengthen it out because I don't want to water my plants. My plants should become more drought tolerant if I'm watering deeply so their roots are going down. That's my hope. So watering every day and shallowly, you're actually doing your plants a disservice. And I don't know if you're watering at a shallow way or not, but deep is much better. Next, compost. How do you know when it's done? When you dig into it and it's this beautiful, friable black gold.
Okay.
It's not clumpy, or it might be clumpy.
There might be
but,
a few little sticks in it.
Yeah, from sticks, and things have pretty much broken down. You can't really tell what was in there.
So you still see the leaves. It's not ready yet.
Yeah, you might see a few leaves here and there. I do sometimes, but most of my compost, the leaves are totally gone. There might be little stems, little sticks, stones, but for the most part, it's a homogeneous, wonderful, dark brown, black, good earthy smelling mixture.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
you're
Jonathan,
welcome.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Deborah loves calls about compost.
I want to be the compost queen.
Well,
is there a
I don't
queen
know.
Of
I
compost?
Think there, we often get calls about compost. It's not as simple to people who are new at it. Nancy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, did we lose Nancy?
Well, maybe. Hello, Nancy. Well, I don't know. Maybe she walked away. We'll try her again. Donald in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Oh, we lose Donald too?
No, it's Donald.
Oh, hi, Donald.
Okay, good.
You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Donald.
Yeah, I dug up my tomato bed and I spread black plastic out.
Okay.
And cut holes, and I put my tomatoes down in there. Now, and then I put straw over the black plastic.
Oh, good, because otherwise you just made a heat. Yeah. Okay.
Now, would that be better than like putting a layer of wet newspaper down, or would the newspaper be better?
My concern about the black plastic is that the only place that rain is going to be able to get through is in those holes where your tomatoes are. That it's pretty impermeable. When you put a mulch down or when you put something down, you want water and air to be able to get down into the soil. So I'm a little bit concerned about the black plastic. In terms of newspaper, I've used newspaper before in between plants as to get a bed started, but I've not really used newspaper as a mulch. Although, you know, it just occurred to me, shredded paper, you know, we shred all that paper. That would seem like it would be a mulch in between plants and also go back to the soil. So I am a bit concerned about the plastic. And I
have a big problem with the weeds. I mean, they
just
take over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I went and poked a bunch of holes in that plastic, would that be okay?
I'm not sure if the raindrops are that good at finding those holes.
Yeah.
That's, but I understand about the weed problem. And I think, what you might need to do is do some sheet mulching. If you look up the concept lasagna gardening, look at lasagna gardening. It's a great idea. It's sheet mulching with a really cool name. and it explains how to build your bed. Then you make holes in the sheet mulch or in the lasagna garden, put your plants in. And while it might sound like a lot of work initially, it makes a great vegetable bed. But I know what you mean about the weeds. It is a battle.
Oh, they're terrible, yeah.
So,
all kinds.
So look up lasagna gardening and good luck with your weeds.
Thank you, miss.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Donald.
Bye.
From an email from Cynthia, is it too late to trim back my butterfly bush? It is presently about 9 feet tall.
Oh, no.
And now it is shedding leaves like crazy, and the leaves have yellow-brown markings, not healthy, apparently. I am wondering if it is a bacterial issue. Will the fallen disease leaves contaminate other plants growing nearby? My peppers, tomatoes, basil, zinnias. If I don't trim the butterfly bush, what do I do to treat the supposed ailment?
Wow, there's a lot of questions in there.
Well,
okay,
let's just stick with that one.
All right. First of all, the butterfly bush, the bacteria or fungal leaf spot that you have on it, and I don't know which one it is, probably fungal, probably will not transfer to your other plants. Most of the fungi are rather specific, and the buddleia is very different from your vegetable garden. Is it too late to prune it? Usually we like to prune it earlier, mid-April. But if there's a disease problem and you are growing food plants by it, you're not going to spray a fungicide on your buddleia. So take it down, give it some compost, give it some water, look for new growth to start. It's a pretty tough plant. And if by some chance it doesn't make it, your garden center, local garden centers have a lovely variety of buddleias that you could replace it with. I would be concerned, though, if there's a lot of leaves on the ground. You need to clean all that up. That's a cultural way to get rid of a pathogen, is to clean up as many leaves as you can, because if you put a buddleia back there, you run the chances of getting it, that fungus or bacterial leaf spot back on the plant.
Email from Lou, I noticed a weird bug on my spirea, which looked like a black beetle with orange stripes on its back. When I looked up what it was, it came up as an Asian ladybug before they become round with spots. I know they eat aphids, but are considered a pest. Do you consider them a pest or helpful because they eat aphids? I'm trying to decide if I should spray the spirea with insect spray or leave it alone. And she really wants to answer this.
Okay. All right. Don't spray it. If you did indeed identify it as the larval form of the lady beetle, then I know the Asian lady beetles we're not real fond of. They are a problem, but they do eat aphids, and they eat other bad insects on our plants. So let them be, and make sure your house, if you see Asian lady beetles getting in your house, kill them. But they do serve a purpose in the landscape, so don't spray. Okay.
Deb in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Deb.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, real thank good.
You. So I have outside my back door a patch of mint. It's both spearmint and peppermint.
Mm-hmm. Together?
And yeah, they've mixed
okay.
themselves together. And
okay.
I love having them out the back door because I actually want to use it just in cooking and things.
Mm-hmm.
And they've all developed kind of a brown spots with holes in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Little stippling, like somebody took something and made little holes on your plants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's and it's also spread to my Shasta daisies,
mm-hmm.
which are not far from there.
Right.
So what is it and how do I make it go away?
It is the nasty little four-line beetle or four-line
okay.
bug, and it has two forms. Its younger form is like a little red, very fast-moving beetle. And then it morphs into its adult form. It's different instars. Its adult form is a long beetle that has four lines on it. Yellow, okay. black, green, two blacks, one yellow, one green,
wow.
something like that. So what I do is I smush them when I see them. I have tried pepper sprays and garlic sprays. It doesn't work. And that has been recommended. Most of the time, fortunately, they only have one generation. At least they used to. I'm hoping they don't decide to have another. And when they are all done, which will be probably beginning, mid of June, I cut back the damaged parts, put those in my compost pile. And now that I'm thinking about it, I've never noticed if they lay eggs or not. Am I reinfecting my plants?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, they love the mint family and the aster family. And
okay.
the mint family is your mints, and the aster family is your Shasta daisy. So hopefully they will go away soon, and then the plant will put out new leaves, and you'll still have that stippling effect. You'll just have to, there's really nothing that you can do that I've found that is organic, since you're planning on using the mint in your cooking.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to know that they may go away soon.
Yeah. Hopefully sooner than later.
Hopefully.
Thank you, Deb.
You're welcome.
An email from Alex. This year I organized an event to plant willow stakes, which are bare sticks about 3 feet long. The method is to make a hole with a planting tool like a rod, then insert the stake. We did this to stabilize a shoreline at one of our reservoirs. What other plants would work with this method? Don't say honeysuckle. I've had some success with forsythias.
I wouldn't say honeysuckle.
Never.
That's on the invasive plant list for Ohio. Willows, good. I'm not coming up with anything on the shoreline. I don't know which shoreline it is, whether it's sandy or clay soils or whatever, but it sounds like you're in the right direction with willows. Other plants that like more water, there might be buttonbush, but it does like a little bit more shade. And on the shore, you don't have much shade. But buttonbush also loves water, so consider that.
Email from Rich in Victorian Village. I have noticed people are growing the poisonous nightshade plant datura mm-hmm. in their landscaping and read that it can cross-pollinate with other nightshade plants such as tomatoes and eggplant, making their fruits somewhat toxic. Is there any truth to this? Should people avoid growing these things together?
Now, there's a good question. And you know what, Rich? I'm going to post something on Facebook. Intuitively, I know that a bee could go and get pollen from your tomatoes and then go to, or whatever pollinating insect goes to the datura and vice versa. I do not know about making the fruit bitter and slightly toxic. I will have to check that out and get back to you.
Dave and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hi, how's it going? I like your show. It's nice. It's informative. And I have a quick question. I had a soil test done and... Well, I did it, and my soil turned out to be kind of flat. It doesn't have any nitrogen or phosphorus. It's got a little potash, but is that going to be a long-term issue, or do I need to just keep supplementing or improving it?
It's a long-term issue. It's something that you need to be aware of, that you have low levels, and a lot of times that also means low levels of organic matter in the soil. Did you get an organic matter percentage?
No. Well, it has a lot of leaf litter and ground up leaf litter and stuff like that. I thought that would just basically decompose. But I guess you need the soil nutrients, not nutrients, but the bacteria to work with nitrogen, right?
Right. Actually, if you add nitrogen and phosphorus to your soil, there should be some recommendations with that. And I know we're running out of time. That's a big question. Take a look at Facebook tonight. I will put some information up for you, okay?
Oh, all right. I appreciate it.
Sorry, Dave, we're running out of time, though.
Yeah.
thank you, Deborah Knapke, for joining us again.
You're welcome.
Just in time for the long weekend so we can all get some gardening done. Deborah Knapke, she's author of many books, co-author of many books, and also known as Ohio's Garden Sage. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our all-side staff. Producer Linda Taylor, Associate Producer Amy Jurevich, Allsides Intern Corinne Gleckler, Allsides Production Assistant Katie Higgins, Allsides Volunteers Kaitur Pessoa, and Rachel Ramey, with video production by Rich and Amber Karsmiski. Thanks for listening. This is Allsides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.